Next case this morning is United States versus Ponce.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Pablo De Castro. I'm here for the appellant, Moises Ponce. And Mr. Ponce's appeal addresses a very specific issue with respect to the application of sentencing guideline 5C1.2, commonly known as the safety valve provision. I'm sure the Court is aware the safety valve allows for a defendant to be sentenced without regard to the statutory minimum if he meets certain conditions. The issue in this case is very narrow. The only question was whether or not he had met the final condition of providing to the government truthfully and completely all of the information known to him about the offense. With respect to all of the other conditions, it was agreed by all the parties that all the other conditions were satisfied. The question was whether he gave all the information known to him. It was undisputed that Mr. Ponce made two proffers to the government. It was undisputed what the detailed contents of those proffers were. The only question was the government's contention that there was something more that Mr. Ponce was holding back. With respect to that contention, the government offered no evidence and only argument. The issue for this court, although the issue in the district court was one of fact, the issue for this court is how that issue of fact was resolved. It's our contention that the issue in the district court was resolved by reliance on argument and opinion of the government and not on the evidence presented. And while we recognize that the government has no burden to bring evidence on this issue, we do believe that they should be restricted in their arguments to the evidence that has been presented. And if they wish to argue that some unnamed agent on some unnamed date or time may have made a statement to the effect that would contradict something Mr. Ponce said, they should have presented some evidence of that fact. To simply argue it cannot be held to be sufficient.
Of course, you're not arguing, are you, that the government bears the burden of proof here?
No, Judge Rovner. I've tried that before, as you may know. And I well recognize that this court has refused to impose a burden as some other circuits have done. What we're asking here is much less than that. What we're asking here is merely the enforcement of the general proposition, the basic proposition, that issues of fact should be resolved on the evidence. And the government, although it has no burden to bring the evidence, should be confined to the evidence.
And but Mr. Ponce doesn't dispute admitting to the information that was relevant at, you know, the second meeting only after he was confronted with contradictory evidence, and I think that's, you know, the problem.
There were two problems, and I guess I'm talking about the other one. The one that you're talking about, Your Honor, is that the government complained that Mr. Ponce contradicted himself between the first and the second proffer. We believe that that issue was resolved by the fact that he came clean eventually before the sentencing, because the statute only requires, or the guideline requires, that he provide the information prior to sentencing. And in addition, the district court in its ruling did not address that issue. The district court in its ruling indicated that its ruling was based on the government's arguments on the other issue, the government's complaint that Mr. Ponce did not admit he was present in Laredo, Texas when the truck was loaded. On that issue, the government presented argument that they, in their brief, characterize as a proffer, but as our contention, it does not rise to the level of a proffer. It's merely argument and opinion. The danger that we're trying to avoid is that it's a situation where the government can come in and simply shrug their shoulders and say, we think there's something else, without any requirement that they show why they think this, on the basis of what evidence they think this, and then for the court to adopt their opinion as its own without any requirement or showing of any evidence, Your Honor, creates a situation where this benefit can be given or denied by the government at their whim. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I paused. It looked like you had a question.
No, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, these sentencing reductions, it is the government. At its whim, basically.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's true with respect to the 5K1.1 motion, which clearly states in the guideline it's the government's motion, the government's burden to bring that motion. With respect to this guideline specifically states it's the defendant's burden to satisfy the court that he has provided this information, not the government. The danger we're trying to avoid was illustrated in this case in the record. On the May 16th transcript of the sentencing hearing, where the court at the bottom of page 8 indicated that according to the PSI, the government was unsatisfied with the completeness and truthfulness of the proffer. The court then turns to the defense and says, how can I provide this benefit if you haven't satisfied this requirement? And my response is that that's not the requirement. The requirement is not to satisfy the government, it's to satisfy the court. And when the court bases its entire ruling on whether the government's happy, the court's abdicating its responsibility under this guideline, creating what should be two separate guidelines and melding them into one, giving the government the power on both issues.
I know, but at bottom line, the government has established that the defendant is not fully cooperative in providing truthful information during interviews. That's the bottom line. And it almost doesn't matter how you get there, does it?
Well, Your Honor, I think it does matter how you get there. I think the evidence of some requirement of an evidentiary basis is important. I don't think the government walking in and just saying, we're not happy. Your Honor puts it very well when you said that if they establish that some information has been withheld, that's fine. But that must be established, as you say. It must be established by evidence or some evidentiary reference, even by a proffer, which we don't...
But he didn't. See, I think I'm having a problem. Maybe I'm missing something. But he didn't give them all the relevant information that he had concerning this offense. He didn't. He wasn't truthful.
It was always his contention that he was truthful, Your Honor. The contention to the contrary was only that he had been untruthful in the first meeting and that he came clean in the second, and with respect to the other issue, that he always denied his presence in Laredo, Texas.
Right, and that's a problem because there were two agents who saw him there.
And a CI.
I mean, to me, that to me is, you know, more weighty than perhaps the other lies where he eventually came around, but the agents eyeballed him there.
Judge Williams, I agree if that were put into the record in evidence. Our argument here is that was not a legitimate proffer offered by the government. The agents were not named. There was no indication when they made these statements, what these statements were, whether they made any written statements or affidavits. The only evidence that the agents saw them was the counsel's argument. Government stood up and said, the agent told me that he saw him in Texas. I don't believe that qualifies as a proffer, and that's why we're here.
But aren't those statements by officers of the, you know, court? And
well, in other cases, Your Honor, there's always been an officer, an agent testifying at sentencing, or at least testifying by formal proffer. There's always been some requirement that evidence be brought forth. In this case, all they did was argue it, and that was deemed enough by the court, in our opinion, that is incorrect.
Let me ask you this, because I just can't remember from the record. Once that government made that argument, was there a request by the defense to get the names of those witnesses or to postpone the sentencing hearing so that those witnesses could be called or to ask for an affidavit?
I don't recall if the defense made that request.
I don't remember seeing that.
My point in this appeal is that the court should have required that counsel for the government should have been restricted in its arguments to the evidence.
I understand, but certainly if the court overrules that objection, then there are other alternatives that counsel could pursue, like asking the court, you know, can we have an affidavit? I'd like to postpone the sentencing so that these witnesses can be called. I just raised it. That's all. I just thought maybe I'd missed something.
Was there a photograph of your client in Laredo?
I don't believe it was ever introduced in evidence or even demonstrated at the sentencing hearing. I don't know if it was referred to, but again, it puts us in the same position with the alleged proffers of the government. Mere reference and argument to something that's never been shown.
Well, that's why I asked about the photograph. I mean, that's
I don't think
a little
it was
different
shown.
than the...
I agree if it exists, but I don't think it was ever shown. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Oldham?
May it please the Court. There was no error by the district court in this case, and there was certainly no clear error. As Your Honors have pointed out, the defendant bore the burden of proving, by a preponderance of the evidence, that he had provided the government a complete and truthful statement as to all the information he had regarding this offense. He simply failed to do that.
Let's get to this last point that he made on the Laredo and the two agents that saw him. And the fact that the only evidence, well, there was really no evidence the court had, but was the argument of government counsel at sentencing. What, weren't they entitled to have an affidavit or an agent to testify to that? And why should the court have relied just on the assistant statement?
Well, Your Honor, in discovery, the defendant was provided with the names of the two federal agents that were acting undercover in Laredo, Texas. The defendant had the ability to call those witnesses at the sentencing hearing, and he chose not to do that. He bore the burden of doing so. It was not the government's burden to bring those agents forward.
And was it in some document report that he had been tendered that the two agents saw him in Laredo, Texas?
My understanding is that the agent's report did not reveal that identification had been made.
So then, therefore, in anticipation of sentencing, he certainly could not have known that he needed to get an affidavit or call those witnesses. This really just arose in the prosecutor's statement, correct?
My understanding is that during the course of the proffers, that this issue was discussed with defense counsel, and there was reference made to that in the sentencing transcript. But certainly the defendant could have requested a continuance if he wanted the ability to bring those agents up to testify on his behalf. He had the ability to question them as to whether or not he was in fact present in Texas. He chose not to do that, and he simply didn't carry his burden in that regard. It was not the government's burden to carry here. There is no dispute that those two agents were in Texas at the time that the marijuana was loaded. And there is no dispute that the defendant had the ability to call them.
There was reference to a photograph as well. Was that disclosed to the defendant, the existence of the photograph?
I'm not familiar with the photograph that you're referencing.
Well, apparently the DEA agents identified him from a photograph.
Oh, a photograph that they've seen after the fact.
Right.
I am not aware of whether or not that was produced. I would assume that it was not. Based on what I've read, I haven't seen any indication that he was provided with that photograph.
So the only indication was their statement at sentencing that the photograph existed.
Exactly. But that wasn't the only, there were two issues that the district court concluded that the defendant had failed to prove by a preponderance of evidence that he provided complete and truthful information about. The first was whether or not he was in Texas when the marijuana was loaded, and the second was the timing of his first meeting with the co-defendant, Mr. Antunes. There is no dispute that during the first safety valve proffer, the defendant lied about when he first met Mr. Antunes. There is also no dispute that the defendant came clean about that during the second safety valve proffer. The problem with that is that the defendant only came clean about when he first met Mr. Antunes after being provided with irrefutable evidence that he had lied about the timing of his first meeting. Phone records which indicated that he had met or at least been in contact with Mr. Antunes at a much earlier time period than he had indicated during his first proffer. And as this court is clearly aware, to qualify for the safety valve, the defendant must make a good faith effort to cooperate. And this court held in United States versus Ramuno that a defendant fails to make a good faith effort if he provides an untruthful version of events and then, quote, lies in wait, unquote, until provided with proof of that lie. That is exactly what happened in this case. The defendant did not come clean about the timing of his initial meeting with Mr. Antunes until he was provided with proof that he could simply not contradict. And that is simply not good enough to qualify for the safety valve. The district court in this case correctly found that the defendant had failed to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that he had provided complete and truthful information. Unless there are any other questions, I'll conclude and respectfully request that this court affirm the defendant's sentence.
Thank you. Mr. Castro, we'll give you one more minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address the government's reference to United States versus Ramuno. In that case, the defendant had written a letter that contradicted what he stated in his proffer. The letter was written before the proffer. It was discovered after the proffer and produced in court. So in that sense, the defendant told lies. He did not merely omit information. He told lies and then laid in wait until he was confronted. And the court said that once confronted, you know, that's not good enough, basically. Once confronted to turn your story around is not good enough. In this case, it was the defendant's version that he, by mistake and through no malice, omitted this information or got it incorrect. He did not believe it was that important. The government hasn't shown why, if at all, it was important. I mean, it's as though they asked him if it was raining one day and he said it wasn't. They confronted him with a weather report and he goes, okay, it was raining, I guess. They haven't shown why it's important, this fact, and he did correct it without argument, without, as in some of these other cases, several attempts after being admonished by the court to go back into more proffers. In this case, all it took was they reminded him of the fact and he agreed.
Does Mr. Ponce need a translator? Do you know?
I don't, Your Honor. I don't know whether he communicated with a translator.
Thank you, Mr. Castro.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.